Welcome to What's Working. I'm Cam Marston. This is the What's Working Special Edition. And proud to go across the pond and way down south today. The show, let's say, What's Working is brought to you by Regions. And the goal of the show is to bring you content, little bits of information that are going to make you a little bit better at what it is that you do, especially during the times of the COVID economy. What I'm doing today is going international, much more so than my Canadian connections in the past, but going across the Atlantic as well as into South America to bring you some, I would suggest, non-traditional ways of thinking about the COVID economy right now. And I'm looking forward to introducing you to two friends of mine who are going to help us think a little bit differently about what's going on around here. Now, one of the things that we are going to add to the show, you're hearing it here first, one of the things we're going to add to the show is asking our listeners, that's you, to get involved and answer this question. Based on the changes that you've made in the COVID economy, are there things that you're going to keep and are there things that you're going to leave behind? Keep it or leave it. Keep it or leave it. What are the new business practices that you've had to adopt in the COVID economy that you're going to keep? And after having talked to a couple of people just about this idea thus far, many of them are going to keep up the Zoom calls, the Zoom meetings, and things of this nature. And are there things that you've had to do during the COVID economy that you cannot wait to leave behind? And I want to hear what those are. And I'm going to give you the ways to reach out to me and tell me your story. And if your story's pretty good, if you've got a pretty good explanation for this thing, we might just bring you on the air, whether it's on the phone or in the studio. So here's the way to get in touch with me. Now, this is the What's Working with Cam Marston phone line. This is not the studio line. This one's different. That number, 251-260-8100. Again, 251-260-8100. Send us a text to that number. Leave me a voicemail at that number. It is not a manned line. What are you going to keep? What are you going to throw away? What can't you wait to throw away? Second way to reach out is cam@whatsworkingcam.com. That's my email address, cam@whatsworkingcam.com. Or you can go to the webpage, whatsworkingcam.com, and there you'll find a feedback button. And give me your story. What are you going to keep? What are you going to leave behind? I'm very curious to see if there are any trends in what you're sharing with me of what you're going to keep and what you're going to leave behind. Now, who do we have upcoming? Stephen Cowell is a friend of mine. He and I have known each other for, 15 some odd years. He sold his business. I'll get him to tell his story in a little while, but became kind of a hobbyist military historian. And the book of his that I'm holding in my hand right now is The Demise of the Military Hero. He has studied the behaviors of many of the military figures, both in the UK as well as in the US and others, on what their characteristics were, what their personalities were, and things that they did well and things that they did poorly. The book is about how we no longer revere the same military heroes like we once did in the past. But in writing the book, Stephen had to get to know their characteristics. Many of these people, these military heroes, were faced with times of uncertainty. They had a lot of information about stuff, but they had a very scarce amount of information of the things they really needed in order to do their campaigns effectively. Very similar to business owners today. We can get a ton of information about some stuff, but the information that we truly need is very scarce. How do we go about making decisions in this environment? What can we learn from these military heroes? I can tell you from the speaking circuit back in the day, there were people talking about military heroes of the past, and people ate it up. And I'm very curious of what Stephen is going to have for us. After Stephen, I'm going to get Christian Drueta on the line. Christian, again, is another friend. He'll be calling from Salta, Argentina. And he leads the only outfitter in the Salta province. And he has, that's where we go bird hunting every now and then. And the birds are incredible. They've been under no hunting pressure over the past 6 or 8 weeks. I'm going to ask him what he's done to react to the COVID crisis. And I want him to tell me what the birds look like. I miss it. I was there a year ago today and I thought of him this morning. We'll be back after this break with Stephen Cowell. You're listening to What's Working. I'm Cam Marston. What's Working is brought to you by Regions. We We're back. You're listening to What's Working. I'm Cam Marston. What's Working is brought to you by Regions. I told you we were going across the pond today, and it's our first attempt to do something like this. I'm happy to say Stephen Cowell is on the line, an old friend of mine calling in from Morpeth in the UK at Longhurst Hall, where I used to deliver seminars for him to his clients, and I have wonderful memories of Longhurst Hall, and particularly the old wine cellar at Longhurst Hall called the Sticky Wicket, which had been changed into a bar, and they had one of the world's greatest jukeboxes down there. I'll never forget it. Stephen, thank you so much for your time, your willingness to call from England. Welcome to What's Working.
It's a pleasure, Cam. It's so good to hear you again.
It's nice to talk to you as well. You've had such an interesting career. Why don't we get started there? Tell us about your career and what has led you into this expertise of military history.
Well, on leaving university, I wish I could say I had a defined plan like some of the best generals, but I didn't. I just wanted a job near home and near my girlfriend, and I saw a job advertising internship in the local education board. So I progressed for 20 years or so as a normal career, getting some promotions, moving around the country. But I realized that after a bit and analyzing myself that I was too much of a maverick to go much further without getting into trouble. So I started my own company. The company grew rapidly. I had 450 staff within 7 years, which was not bad going. And we did the training for all the major UK utilities, gas, water, electrical, rail. I knew not a thing about these, but I appointed people who did, and I think that's one of the lessons I pulled out from military. I don't know which one it was who said the secret to success is to appoint people better than you, but I believe it's pretty sound advice.
So early in your professional career, you had been studying military you have become a military historian, studying the behavior of a lot of these people, and were taking their advice from a long time ago. Is that correct?
Well, probably subconsciously, but I read history at university, and I'd already built up quite a library. And I think subconsciously, yes, because I didn't read novels, and so I read serious, probably almost like textbooks as my light reading. And now I've got a huge library of books on history.
So one of the challenges of great military leaders, of any military leader, Stephen, is information. They probably have an extraordinary amount of information of one type, and there it goes back to the old aphorism, we always have too much of what we don't need. They have an extraordinary amount of information of one type, but each military leader faced with crisis, with conflict, is looking for more and more information that will help give them an advantage. I think we can draw a parallel to what we're going through right now. There's an extraordinary amount of information that we could get about the COVID crisis, about the numbers in the economy, but what we don't know is what's going to happen. We can't predict the future. We don't know. So give me an example of one of the military leaders that you've studied and what they did in a similar situation where they had a lot of information, they didn't have enough of the information they needed, yet they forged, they pushed forward and ended up successful. What did they do?
Yeah, I'll give you two. Unfortunately, these are Brits, so apologies for that. But Wellington, Duke of Wellington, remarked that the whole art of war, and indeed the business of life, was to endeavor to find out what you don't know by what you do. And that's what I call guessing at what's on the other side of the hill. And he said time spent on reconnaissance was seldom wasted. And I think more than anything, what comes across on COVID is that we should have spent more on tracking and tracing. But the person I would bring out but most recently is Air Vice Marshal Dowding, who led the Royal Air Force in the Battle of Britain. And the reason I bring him out is that the true thing of what came out to me for the characteristics of military leaders was not only about seeing what was in front of you, but also projecting those trends forward and analysing what will a battle look like in 10 years' time. And that's what Dowding did. He constructed a whole defence system on an art of war which had never existed before. So he had radar, spotters, planners, plotting the, we've all seen the films with the commanders looking down on the boards below them. None of that had existed at the time Dowding set up the system. And I believe now that message of the trends that we see happening, people working from home, people having more leisure time, people shopping online, these are trends that have been happening, and they will continue and grow, but it's the people who recognize how they're going to impact in the future that I think the lessons from the military historians come out. You know, I thought Patton was another one who had analyzed the First World War and what had happened with defensive nature, and realised how important the tank was going to be. And it took him a great effort to persuade the American military that he was right, because their mental attitude was seeing what had gone on before, not what was happening now and in the future.
So a lot of the, what you've explained, Stephen, is a lot of the success that these military leaders have had has been through examining what's happening before. You also said, though, the ability to project the trends, to see where they're leading us. Where is the connection between those two? It seems if we look back for too long, we only become aware of what, you know, of history versus looking forward and trying to guess. There's got to be a link or a training. And I'm wondering if these military leaders had some sort of training that taught them how to connect what they're seeing from the past into trends for the future. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I think we have to be careful not to ascribe all military leaders of having these qualities. I think the ones we remember. But the thing that the word I would pick out from what you have said there is training. The people I studied, Grant, Patton, Eisenhower, Montgomery, and Wellington, what was absolutely clear on linking where they had their experiences and where they saw things going in the past was training, and ensuring that everybody had clarity of objective and they knew what their role would be. And again, the British military have just built a hospital in 10 days.
Now this
it was never used.
Yeah.
Actually, never had any patients. It's now been closed down. But it showed what could be done with clarity of purpose. And I think that's what the great military leaders do. They have absolute clarity of purpose.
I think your comments on clarity of purpose are worth exploring a little bit. And I want to emphasize that this hospital that was built in 10 days, this is not a historical thing. This is recently, correct?
Oh, no. This is in the last 2 months.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
The British politicians were scared stiff of seeing bodies, that there might be bodies on the streets and, you know, not enough hospital space. So they got the military to build, and actually they built half a dozen hospitals within a month. And the first one in London took 10 days.
Yes.
And But they were applying an absolute clarity. What is the end objective? And I think this is the difference between military people who have studied and politicians and most like bureaucrats, is they don't distinguish between the end objective and the method of getting there. And so it's having that absolute clarity of what our aim is that I think is one of the principal lessons that comes out from studying great military leaders.
Let's talk about clarity of purpose still. I want to get further into that. Now, the clarity of purpose for a military leader is often, this is, I'm naive, so I submit this to you, is often given to them. The politicians, the public, whomever it may be, gives the military leader the clarity of purpose. The goal of this engagement is blank. And they have, and I don't want to say it's easy, but choosing a clarity of purpose is difficult. Being given your clarity of purpose and being given the resources to pursue that may be a little bit easier when you don't have to come up with it yourself. Many of my business owners who are listening in right now are struggling with the exact same thing I'm struggling with. What is my clarity of purpose right now? What am I here to do? Now, a family business clarity of purpose is to keep the business in place so that the next generation can take it over. A franchise clarity of purpose may be a little bit different. That's been given to them by a franchise owner or franchise head, whatever it may be. But many of my listeners are independent business people who perhaps want to be all things to all people. Give us some advice from your studies on how to select or determine the clarity of purpose.
Wow. big question. You have to define military leader. In my view, Churchill was a military leader, and I think that because he was himself a military person. He'd had a military start to his career. He was a brigadier in the First World War. And he had absolute clarity in what the purpose was victory. Now, I believe for many people now in COVID and small businesses, the purpose is survival. I've got lots of friends in small businesses at the moment, and a lot of their thinking has utterly changed because it's just focused the mind. How can I survive? And I think that is pertinent to the military, because the military issue is how do we ensure that we are here tomorrow? And that's how I would answer your question. It's about ensuring that you're there to fight the next day. And so all your decisions about cash flow and how you're going to manage your business are actually now concentrated and focused on survival.
And the clarity of purpose.
I don't know whether that makes sense.
No, it is. It does. The clarity of purpose is let's make sure we're here tomorrow. And I guess when cash flow and other things become more predictable, we can refine the clarity of purpose more towards a customer orientation than a internal orientation, right? If your focus is survival, it's a lot of looking inside the organization. What do we need to do to cut expenses? What do we need to do to care for clients as best as we can? But it's not as customer focused. I'm curious, when you ran the business where I met you, did you have a clarity of purpose that you feel made you as successful as you were?
I had my clarity of purpose. Firstly, was fear of failure, and I was driven by ensuring I didn't fail. It sounds a perverse way of expressing it. And the way to show I hadn't failed was to grow, and I set myself a target of growing a minimum of 20% a year. We always way exceeded it. But one of the things I would look back on and think, even though we were growing rapidly, I failed to see, and I think this is so important now at this critical time when things are changing, I failed to see what was in front of me. So I actually, because I mentioned I buy many, many books, I have a huge personal library, and I never, ever noticed that I was buying all my books from Amazon. And I didn't do anything about it, and I kicked myself for not buying Amazon stock 15 years ago.
Let's talk about that when we get back from break, Stephen, because that is a trend, I think, and I've heard other people like you say the obvious things that we're missing that we could pick up in front of us. Let's go to break. We'll come back. We'll pick up there. You're listening to What's Working. I'm Cam Marston. What's Working is brought to you by Regions. On the line with me, Stephen Cowell from the North of England, military historian by hobby. We'll be right back. On the line with me is Stephen Cowell. Stephen is calling in from the north of England, and I appreciate his willingness to do so. I'm happy to say that even after our short introduction just a little while ago to the program, I am beginning to receive ideas from people on the keep it or leave it idea. If you haven't heard, what part of the COVID experience are you going to keep as a part of your business? What trends do you like and you're going to adopt? On the other hand, what part of the COVID economy, the COVID experience, are you eager to let go and be done with? I'm interested in your stories. Text me at 251-260-8100. You can also leave a voicemail at that same number or email me, Cam, C-A-M, at whatsworkingcam.com. Back to Stephen Cowell. Stephen is a military historian. Stephen, prior to the break, we were talking a little bit about the trends that are right in front of you, or were right in front of you back in the day. You're a big consumer of literature, of books, and you just failed to notice that this company called Amazon.com was delivering every one of them to your door. Tell me more about that.
Well, it's almost staggering, isn't it? I have like 3,000 or 4,000 books in my personal library, and I'm buying books all the time. And how did I not notice that even when I ordered a book from my local bookseller, it came via Amazon? And then when I started going online, and that grew, and then I began to think about that, and I realized that I used to work, before I started my company, for an IT company in the UK, and quite a big corporate business. And every day I started coming across this company called Microsoft and an operating system called MS-DOS. And I used to talk to people and say, these people are going places. They seem to know what's going on. And yet I never did anything about it. You know, I never bought their stock or, you know, and looking back, I think, how could I not see that? And in the same way, when I started my business, I used to come down the stairs in the mall where we had our first offices. And outside was a calf with that sold sandwiches and pies and other snacks. And there was always a big queue outside, huge queue, all day long. And that company, Greggs, has grown to be one of the biggest fast food sellers in the UK, consistently, year after year after year, growing. And again, I never realized it. So for me, and when I went back and looked at all my books on history, it isn't just about projecting forward. It's about seeing what's immediately in front of you and then projecting that forward. And I think the biggest thing, like online shopping, and how that has impacted on the property world. You know, an investor now who's invested in retail, commercial shops and malls is really suffering. But those who've invested in warehouses have done really well. And I think, again, those sort of lessons come out from the successful military commander.
They seem to
unfortunately, it's not always the case that the military leaders get it right.
So they seem to be able to put their finger on what's going on right now, seeing it more clearly, let's say, than the rest of us, and building on those implications. However, and I think you were leading to this, there are some that identify or see things right in front of them and miss the obvious. Do you have a scenario like that?
Well, for me, it's so graphic. And when I first read this, I read the diaries, the war diaries of Field Marshal Haig, who commanded the British armies on the Western Front in Flanders and France in the First World War. And a major battle was to start, the Battle of the Somme. And on the very day before the battle, he said he had great expectations of the battle. He thought the German defense was based on the machine gun, which he considered to be a vastly overrated weapon. And then there was a footnote that 50,000 British troops were casualties on the very first day, the vast majority from the machine gun. 50,000.
Yeah.
So, similarly, I think military people tend to invest in technology, and they haven't actually really understood what is happening. And the best example for me was when the Japanese war started in the Far East. Britain was trying to defend Singapore and sent two battleships, the Renown and the Prince of Wales. But they didn't send any air cover whatsoever, and they'd failed to see what was happening. And within a couple of days, both battleships were at the bottom of the sea because they were just bombed.
Not seeing the...
And so you have to... And I think the same is in business. It's seeing what is in front of you, but projecting that forward so you don't repeat the same mistakes.
Yes, yes. Now, one of the things that I had asked you as we kind of prepared for this is some of the characteristics, I would say, of military leaders. And you said quickly, your reply to me was they are foresight, focus, and finality, which I think are ideas that my audience and I would be very curious about. What do these things mean, and how can we apply them to the business world?
Well, I think we touched on foresight.
Yeah.
I think you've been touching that throughout on this conversation. You know, it's about seeing what's in front of you. You know, and the examples I just gave of seeing Microsoft and Amazon. But now, I think what I would say is that COVID has been a crisis, and battles and wars are crisis in the same way. But the battle takes place at a point in time. There has been something that preceded it, and there will be something that comes after. Trends are there to analyze. So I believe all of the things that we have seen emerge, such as the use of Microsoft Teams and Zoom and online shopping and all these other things that are coming stronger during when people have been locked down, these trends will continue. But how will they continue? And that's where I think and how will it affect your business? That is what people have got to take into account. And I think that is where the great military leaders were able to do that. I mentioned Dowding, but Wellington fought the Battle of Waterloo, and he'd seen what was happening in warfare, and he actually chose the site of the Battle of Waterloo about 10 years before it actually happened. He reconnoitred the northern France and Flanders so that he could find where he thought the battle with Napoleon would eventually take place, and it did. So, and I think that things are not normally quite so dramatic in small business, but it is about saying, well, there are these trends. How are they going to impact on me?
And Wellington was able to predict, I want to get this right, he was able to see the future, essentially, and predict where the, not only that there would be a battle with Napoleon, but where it would take place, and he gained ownership of that ground so he could determine, essentially, determine the outcome. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. He went to the, because he saw the battleground with a sloping ground, and there were farms on either side of the battlefield, and he made sure that he put regiments into the farms and controlled the area around to protect his flanks. And he moved his army on the other side of the slope so that they weren't quite so devastated by the cannons and so on. But in his mind, he'd fought that battle before it actually happened. Just as Dowding had fought the Battle of Britain, they had a clarity as to how it would unfold. And again, not many of us have got those abilities, but what I think the lesson I would bring out from my study and my own personal business career is to think each day, just update, what is happening in front of me? Just like when I went and bought a sandwich, what I should have seen was there's a queue every day.
Yeah, ignoring or paying attention to the, it sounds ridiculous, but paying attention to the obvious. Let's finish with, there's three of them. The final one is finality, ironically. What does that mean in the light of your business career as well as your studies? What does finality mean? We got 1 minute, Stephen.
Finality is just about the clarity. I think about maybe I was trying to be clever and get three F's.
Yes.
But I think it's clarity of purpose. That is what with absolutely decisive, concentrated, positive emphasis on a particular purpose. So, and there's no point in saying, well, you know, a general going into battle and saying, oh, we could do this and we could do that, and oh, maybe we should do this. And you know, when you're talking to your colleagues and you're going forward with a, you've got to be definitive. And this is what I'm trying to put across. And it's the same in business. I don't think, particularly at the time when survival is the name of the game, that you've got to be very, very clear and decisive in what it is you're trying to do.
I think that's a challenge of many people right now. Without the information they need, they don't know exactly what it is that they're going to do. Stephen Cowell is the author of the book, The Demise of the Military Hero. If you want to learn more about his writing, I'm going to encourage you to text me, and I'll send you a link to where to get that book. That text number is 44222. Enter What's Working, CAM, and text it to 44222, and you'll get a link to Stephen's book and how to find more information on it. Stephen, it's wonderful to talk to you again. There's always lessons to be learned by the military heroes, by the military folks. I see it in the presentation business that I do. They're on the stage all the time talking about the things that they learned in their time in the Army or the Navy, the Air Force or the Marines. Thank you, Stephen. Folks, we'll be back after this break with Christian Drueta from Argentina talking about the bird problem. We'll be right back. Special thanks to Stephen Cowell for giving some of us his time from the north of England. The demise of the military hero. There's always a lot to learn. And I tell you what, folks, I spend a lot of time on the road, or did back in the day. And there was always some military connection at these big conferences, whether it's a fighter pilot or a Navy SEAL or something. There's always a thirst for these military heroes. Now, let's change hats and fly south. Christian Drueta is on the line with me, an old friend. He's the president of Yungas Outdoors. He's an outfitter in Argentina. He runs the Tucu Lodge in the Salta province. And folks, let me tell you this. He is the only authorized outfitter in the Salta province. And if you wonder how big that is, the state of Alabama is 52,000 square miles. The Salta province is 60,000 square miles. And he's got exclusive hunting rights. And if you're a wing shooter, that means a lot. Christian, thank you so much for your call. It's nice to talk to you again. Welcome to What's Working.
Hi, Tom. Good afternoon. Good afternoon to the audience. We're all in this situation, you know, a normal situation. And tourists at Tucu Lodge is the main source of income for our families, like guys, bird boys, drivers, mountaineers, kitchen and lodges. Stuff and these are difficult times for everyone, but we keep it strong and prepare it and ready for return to activity.
So when the COVID crisis hit, Christian, did your hunters cancel? Did you have to cancel on them? Did they still want to go? Take me through what happened in mid-March and April when the crisis fully developed.
Well, since of March, we have a. I have a lot of calls, you know, but seeing that, you know, it was kind of a difficult situation to understand what's going on at the beginning. So during that month, I had scheduled to travel and hunt at Tucu Lodge. And during this time, window to express my most understanding and sympathetic approach towards this global phenomenon, which is now that affecting all of us, our business and our income, and think we are all in this together. So I offer 100% flexibility to our clients and give 2 years to reschedule their trips. So no cancellation fees apply, and every dollar spent remains a credit for the trip on later date.
When do you hope? I know the state of Argentina, the nation of Argentina, closed down all international air travel. They even closed down all national air travel within the nation. Is that still in place?
That is still in place. All the domestic flights are canceled. And the Argentine government announced to open the frontiers by middle of August. And airlines companies will start selling tickets for regular flights to Argentina maybe in a few weeks. But we're just waiting for the, you know, official announce for the government.
Tell me, Christian, the listening audience here in the Deep South, in the Mobile, Alabama area, there are a lot of hunters out there listening right now. And I want you to tell us about the bird problem. I mean, you told me earlier today that the farmers were calling you saying, hey, get me my hunters back. The birds are out of control. And folks, if you want to know how bad it is, these are extraordinary tracts of land, agricultural land. And Christian tells me the birds eat 25% of the crops. 25%. That's extraordinary. Yeah. Christian, what's going on?
Well, you know, in the meantime, the dog is quiet, clean, and perfectly neat. The doves and pigeon nesting all around Tucu Lodge are also benefiting from unprecedented and once in a lifetime quiet nesting season. Without a single shot, begin fire. The population of the bird is being benefited enormously, and this is will impact on a vastly improved high volume season as soon this is resumes. Same case with our golden dorados, who will be bigger and larger in numbers. I had a lot of calls from landowners and farmers who want us to go shoot in their fields because the population of birds is incredible. They say, please come there. Muchas palomas.
Muchas palomas. Muchas pigeones. Muchas palomas.
Affecting the crops.
Folks, Christian, we got to bring it to a close. I know you've piqued the interest of a lot of folks. Tuku, T-U-K-U Lodge, folks. Look it up online. Tuku Lodge, Christian Drueta. Christian, I'm going to put you back on the radio at another time in our longer edition, which is a Wednesday evening edition, to talk more about this. Tuku Lodge, folks, Christian Drueta. And Joe Brown, Christian, says hello. He was part of our group last year or the year before. Folks, you're listening to What's Working. We'll have some more programming for you next week. Have a good weekend. Christian, stay on the line.